Springfield's News Talk FM 104.1 KSGF Good Friday Morning Friday Road Show, sponsored by Queen City Motors in studio. That's right. We are in studio. We'll let you know as soon as we're not any longer. The upside of being in studio, of course, is the fact that you can watch us on Facebook Live in the world of Facebook 1041 Nick Reed. You will find us there. Bernie Sanders, shock poll. Shock poll has Bernie Sanders a 10-point lead nationally amongst Democrats. Democrat Party, a plurality of Democrat voters anyhow, willing to turn the Democrat Party over to a socialist, or as he officially, I think he's independent in the Senate. He's not a Democrat in any way until he needs to run for president, and then he piggybacks off them. And Democrats are apparently, they're saying to the party, yeah, you know, screw you guys. We're going to take the socialist instead. So he is now flying first class, and because of course he is. Also, I want to talk a little bit about, I love the characterization of Attorney General Barr blasting Donald Trump's tweets. I don't think Attorney General Barr, if you know anything about him or watch any interviews that he's done or listen to him speak, is possible a blasting anyone. He's just not the blasting sort of guy. Though he said things that make a lot of sense, and we'll talk about that here in just a couple of moments as well. Locke and Smith Foundation will join us in studio this morning in the 7 o'clock hour. Don Luzader's here now with the latest news.
And good morning. The state fire marshal is investigating what caused flames to shoot out of a funeral home near Branson. Western Taney County firefighters say they had to close East Highway 76 Thursday night while they fought the flames at Snap Bearden Funeral Home. A witness says she heard what sounded like tires exploding when the fire started. No one was injured. The Missouri Ethics Commission fining former Governor Eric Greitens' campaign almost $180,000 for breaking the law by not reporting it cooperated with a political action committee. The Ethics Commission says the PAC paid for advertising during Greitens' run for governor. The commission says it does not have any evidence that Greitens knew about it, but that he's still responsible. As far as the overall report from the Ethics Commission, Greitens says the findings exonerate him.
This is such a perfect story because it allows... depending on the headlines, you get two totally different ideas of what happened.
And I noticed that last night as I was skimming articles. Exonerated.
I know.
Fine.
I know.
Exonerated. Fine.
And the way you explained it is absolutely accurate. I mean, they found that the campaign committed these violations, but they, you know, didn't. They couldn't find that he specifically directed it or knew about it.
Right.
But, you know, it's his campaign. And so, I guess you'd say those that are more pro-Greitens are out there, saying total exoneration.
Right.
Victory.
Sure.
And then the others, like, his campaign was fined six figures for violating.
Sure. Right. Yeah.
So it's something for everyone.
It's all a matter of the spin you put on it, right?
Yeah, it is. Well, and I, honestly, who knows? You just got to look at it and you say... I mean, do people on campaigns do things that the candidate doesn't know about? Of course.
Sure.
Is this one of those things? Who knows?
Yeah.
Greitens seems like the sort of guy that likes to know everything that's going on that has anything to do with him, but that doesn't mean that he did know about it. But nonetheless, everyone gets to walk away a winner.
I love all these rumors. Yes. I love all these rumors that say that he's considering a run for office.
Let me tell you, I have heard from people that aren't just that. I don't want to say in the know, but, you know, certain people say certain, and you're like, oh, well, they would probably know. Mm-hmm. That said that he's planning on it.
Yeah.
Now, of course, that could change, even if he is at this point. If he's going to run in the primary, he's going to have to do something soon.
Yeah. He's going to have to make an
announcement. Yeah, he can't wait much longer
if
that is the case. But
we'll see.
Yeah, we will see. KTTS First Alert Forecast, sponsored by Anchor Tactical Supply. Sunny 35 today. Tonight, mostly clear 26. Cloudy 49 tomorrow. 57 on Sunday. And with a slight chance of showers on Monday, a high of 61. How very nice. It's cold as cold can be this morning, 7. It feels as if it's the coldest that it has been thus far. So I'd share that little opinion about the temperature with you. Attorney General Barr has done an interview. He did an interview with ABC. It's very difficult to play back sound of Attorney General Barr answering questions because he is so deliberate, so lawyerly, that what would be a 20-second answer for most people is about a 4-minute answer for him. And it's not repetitive in nature. He's just very, very deliberate. And I was pulling audio, and I thought, my gosh, if I, you know, he gets asked this question by ABC fella, you know, about, you know, the nature of tweets or, you know, specific questions, and, you know, how do you feel about this? And it's like, well, I got a 7-minute answer here. I'm going to play that. What interests me were the headlines talking about how, you know, Barr battle and Barr is, you know, oh, he's bashing the tweets. Now, everyone's going to have their own interpretation, but I think if you sit and you listen, you think he's not they make it sound like, uh-oh, it's a huge cage match between Donald Trump and Attorney General Barr. And that is not what happened. Barr is very, very straightforward, matter of fact, unemotional, which to me, blasting someone is an emotional response. He's very unemotional. And what he says, I think, is very factual. He's asked, you know, what are these tweets? He says, well, it makes my job very hard to do. The part of his job that it makes hard to do, according to Attorney General Barr, it's not the execution itself of investigations or prosecutions, but the recognition of the reaction from everybody else. So it is not just the tweet, but the reaction and the fact that here now he's having to answer questions about it because the media pounces all over. Or that, you know, if they're getting ready. And the perfect example is what has occurred now with this Roger Stone stuff. And what we know, which is according to Barr, and I have absolutely no doubt that he's speaking the truth on this. This particular case, there was a new attorney general that came on, you know, towards the end. And when he saw what was going to be pushed in terms of sentencing to the judge, he went to the attorney general and said, this seems wrong. There's something not right about this. This is way too, way over. I mean, you know, we're going to try and nail this guy for twice as long as, you know, rapists go to prison. I mean, you know, something here. It doesn't really jive, and Attorney General Barr says that he agreed, and the attorney, the newer guy who came to him on this, said, well, I think I got a way we can satisfy everyone and you know, get the sentencing down a bit in terms of, you know, a recommendation to the judge and let the judge decide, but lay out all the reasons that we don't, you know, that we think that this 9 years is not legally justified. And Barr said the next thing he knew, he saw in the news that the sentencing was, you know, 7 to 9 years, the recommendation. And he's like, well, what, you know, so I went to figure out what was going on here. And there's some backstory that these, you know, that the guys who were pushing it, you know, were a little unethical in doing so. And that's how it all came about. And I don't know if that information, they were a holdover. These are Mueller guys. These are Rosenstein guys. But the fact of the matter is that recommendation was not a recommendation. The Barr was on the understanding was going to happen because he didn't think that it should have happened that way. And so all of these things were in motion. And he says, and then somebody mentions the president's tweet. And the problem that it causes for him is that the perception, and I understand this, the perception, and much of this is, it's driven, of course, by the media and the Democrats, that Barr did this because of the tweet, that the president is twisting the arm of Attorney General Barr, and that's why he did this, when in fact this was something that was underway before Trump even knew anything about it. And because part of his job is making sure that everything is done ethically and honestly, anytime anybody does something that might cause question of that, that makes his job more difficult. And so it is, it's not just the tweet itself, but it's the reaction to it. It's the willingness, the desire of certain people for political purposes to take those tweets and turn it into a weapon in order to go after Attorney General Barr. But nonetheless, they're obviously going to do that. Now, I'm not naive. Had Trump not tweeted that out, and all of this continued to play out anyhow the way that it did, they'd still go after Barr. I mean, so it's not as if the only reason Democrats are trying to use this situation in order to undermine the Trump presidency is because Trump sent out that tweet. They would have done it anyhow. One of the things that Barr also said is that Trump has never, ever, ever ask him to go one direction or another on the criminal investigation when it came to the Stone prosecution in particular. They've never even had a conversation about it. And I think most reasonable people are going to believe Attorney General Barr on that, because he's the one guy that seems to be above all of this stuff. To the point that when the tweets from the President of the United States are a distraction for him, because of the reaction to them, he'll say it if asked. Yeah, you know, it's not helpful at all. It makes it very difficult. In fact, he said it makes it impossible to do my job of making sure people know that there's no interference going on from the presidency. I suspect, incidentally, that soundbite is going to be used partially in order to requote the Attorney General as claiming that Trump's tweets make it impossible for him to do his job, end quote, when that's not the end quote. He's talking about the aspect of the job of making sure that the courts, the judges, the American people know that there's no political interference going on. And not that that's not insignificant, but I know how the press works. I know how the Democrats work, and I suspect that they're going to start claiming that Barr has made that claim, that on the whole, it makes it impossible for him to do his job as Attorney General, and that's not what he was saying. Springfield's News Talk FM, 104.1 KSGF, and now Shelby with the latest traffic. I covered it yesterday, so I'm not going to go into a great amount of depth on it today. I'm glad it is getting some attention, though not so much in the media, about this lead jurist in this Roger Stone trial. I don't know how something like that happens. This is a guy, okay, so she ran for Congress, was a Democrat. Yeah, all right. She hated Trump, hated everybody associated with Trump, called them all Nazis. Is that enough to disqualify her from the jury, given that this person, the entire trial, Roger Stone's trial, were accusations against him regarding President Donald Trump? Arguably, yeah. But the fact that this woman is out there making posts during the trial and was a advocate in the world of, you know, just cheerleading for prosecuting him. She was out on social media cheering on the prosecutors as they laid out their case against Stone, cheering the arrest of the guy. How a person like that can be on a jury, I don't like to use the word fair that often, because it is a term that generally people use when things don't go their way. And fairness really isn't actually what they're looking for. They're just looking for, you know, it's not fair because it didn't go my way. But that's not fair. That's just not fair. That is not an objective jury. Can you imagine being on trial for something and then knowing one of the jurors, or finding out in retrospect, had it out for you the whole time and they didn't hide it? And the person that you were accused of committing crimes in order to help was somebody that they openly hated and despised and called a Nazi? And they had been publicly cheerleading the prosecution. It's beyond me, and I don't even know how that can occur and it not be caught until she publicly comes forward with it. The way all of this unfolded is Wednesday, she outed herself, if you will, as the foreperson of the jury because she was tired of the prosecutors being badmouthed. And so she was such a staunch supporter and defender of them going after Roger Stone, she had to break her silence. Now that by itself should tell us that there's no way she should have been even anywhere near the courthouse, let alone sitting as a juror to decide the fate of Roger Stone. And it's on CNN where she acknowledged this. And of course, CNN, they don't see it as like a contamination of the justice system. They see it as, oh, well, this just shows how awful Trump is, that this woman has to come out and defend the people that he's attacking. So some other guy, and I don't even know who he is or what outlet, he decided, well, we ought to look into this gal and finds all this whole bread crumb trail of these tweets that show she could not have been any more of a tainted juror. And so the questions that one had, I mean, is this stuff allowed to happen in this country? I mean, maybe I'm naive. I've never been on trial for anything. And I've never made it so far as to, you know, the closest I've come to jury duty is getting the little summons or whatever it's called, saying, well, call the night before. And then I call and they say, oh, you're not needed. You know, there's so many numbers or whatever. So that's the furthest I've ever made it. So I always had this understanding that if you're a juror, you're supposed to be pretty objective. Maybe I watch too much TV, you know, and they're selecting jurors and they're asking, you know, is there anything about you that thinks you cannot be objective in this? You know, do you know this person? You know, have you ever been a victim of this sort of crime? Do you have any sort of prejudice against this sort of individual? Maybe all that's make believe. Because apparently, in America today, at least if this is an example of something that's legit, you can have it out for the person on trial and be a juror. And then that's perfectly okay. Now, I suppose some of this information will come out. I would like to think that it would. Was she vetted in any way, shape, or form? And was she asked the questions that were meant to determine whether or not she could not be an objective or was not an objective juror? And did she lie about those things? She's a former attorney as well, current former. I don't know if she's practicing any longer. So it's not like she's naive to this stuff. But if something doesn't get done about situations like this, how is anybody supposed to have any faith in our justice system? I mean, it's just one thing after another. Whether it's the FBI or people within the Justice Department before Barr came along, you know, the FISA courts using falsified documents to, trick the FISA court into spying on an American citizen running for the presidency, or jurors who have it out for the accused being allowed to be on the jury, and then when it's found out, it's like, well, no big deal. I mean, what? This is not a system of justice in any way, shape, or form. Springfield's News Talk FM 104.1 KSGF. Following his narrow victory in New Hampshire, Democratic presidential Hampshire Democratic presidential primary, Sanders has opened up a double-digit lead over Joe Biden and entrenched himself as the best-positioned candidate heading into the Nevada caucus, which will be a week from tomorrow. According to Morning Consult poll, which was conducted Wednesday. The Vermont Independent, again, even though he's running as a Democrat, is the first choice for 29% of Democrat primary voters. That's up 4 percentage points since the first week in February. Biden's support fell 3 points from that time down to 19%, leaving him 1 point ahead of Mayor Bloomberg. Buttigieg is at 5%, Elizabeth Warren at 5%, Klobuchar is at 5%. Bernie, he is making some gains there. He's now flying first class. Someone who also is in first class took one of those. There's got to be a name for this when you are taking a selfie, but what you're really doing is taking a picture of someone behind you. You know what I mean? You see that a lot. Like somebody, there's a famous person or something going on behind them, and they'll pretend like they're taking a picture of themselves, but in fact, it's a stealth picture of someone else. And so there's a feeble, almost confused-looking Bernie Sanders sitting there in first class behind him. Now, this has gone out all over the internet, gone kind of viral, because, as you know, Bernie Sanders rails against the wealthy and so forth, and this is clearly hypocritical. Now, he and his supporters will tell you all the reasons that he needs to fly in first class. But this is exactly the hypocrisy that the left in particular wraps their arms around, and that defines socialism. That they get to do the things that they criticize others for doing because, well, they have a reason. Other people don't have a reason, see? It's just wrong. It's flat out wrong. The perfect nature of first class itself, with Bernie Sanders railing against the upper class, in his world, there should be no classes. You know, this is one of the reasons that he said, when you see people waiting in line for food at a grocery store, waiting in line for bread, the bread lines, that's a good thing because that means that everyone is equal, everyone's the same. You don't have some people with more food than others. So the very idea of people having different lots in life, if you will, is something that he is fundamentally opposed to. And so what does he do? He chooses to be in first class. An existence, first class, that in his world shouldn't even exist. But this is how they live their lives. These beliefs that they have regarding the ways that other people should not live their lives, that's for everyone else. They always have a reason. You see it with gun control all the time. People that rail, celebrities in particular, rail against gun control, and nobody should have, you know, guns because they're dangerous, so forth. And then it's point, well, I mean, you hire people with guns to, well, that's different. I need it for my safety. Oh, as opposed to everyone else. These individuals that run around touting the need to cut back on carbon emissions, taking their private jets everywhere. But I need to do that in order to spread the word. Bernie Sanders railing against the one percenters, the existence of the ability for people who have more money than others to segregate themselves in a nicer area. For example, first class in airplanes. But for him, well, he needs to do, and he'll explain the reasons why. Why it's necessary and acceptable for him to live that life. I saw someone had posted, and it was perfect. There were four pictures, and it said, your house, in, you know, for socialism, and it was a tenement, and then it was healthcare under socialism, and it showed like Venezuelan hospital, the grocery store in socialism, and it showed what looked like a former Soviet or a Venezuelan grocery store, and it said politicians under socialism. It was a huge mansion. And that is absolutely 100% accurate. Here's Shelby with traffic. Don Carricker, iwantagreathomeloan.com. One of the first things that a person should do before they even go to look at a new home Even if you're just, you're not even really like, oh, we don't plan on buying it, but we've seen that house driving to church every Sunday and always thought, boy, I wonder what that house looks like on the inside. And so they go and then they decide to check it out, and then bam, it's the perfect home. Well, homes are going very quickly. I mean, this is still the situation out there where sometimes the sign does not even get in the yard, hours, and then the house is gone. So you need that pre-qualification letter. That tells the seller that you are not only serious as a potential buyer, but that you qualify. You legitimately can get the funds or have the funds available to you to purchase their home. You've got to have that because, you know, you do one of these Sunday open houses and you love the home and you know in your mind, oh, this isn't going to be a problem at all. I just got to go to my bank on Monday. But somebody else with a pre-qualification letter comes in a couple hours after you do, and guess who gets the offer? IWantAGreatHomeLoan.com because you do. And now, Mr. Don Luzader with the latest news update.
And good morning. A memorial in honor of the victims of the duck boat tragedy in Branson has been shelved for the time being shortly after that duck boat sank in 2018. Discussion rose of building a monument to honor the victims. The idea was first suggested by the Tri-Lakes Board of Realtors, but conflicts arose on where to place the memorial. The group had some grant funds they depended on for the construction of that memorial, but those funds have since expired and can no longer be used. State Fire Marshal is investigating what caused flames to shoot out of a funeral home near Branson. Western Taney County firefighters say they had to close East Highway 76 Thursday night while they fought those flames at Snap Bearden Funeral Home. A witness says she heard what sounded like tires exploding when the fire started. No one was injured. And that is the latest news.
KTTS First Alert Forecast. It is sponsored by Anchor Tactical Supply. Sunny 35 today, 26 tonight. 49 tomorrow, 57 on Sunday, and then with a slight chance of showers on Monday, a high of 61 is expected. It is 8 and clear at the KSGF studios. Bernie Sanders coming under. I may be fair to say that the Democrats are coming out harder against Bernie Sanders than Republicans did against Trump when he was running. And that might very well help Bernie Sanders get elected. Or get the nomination, I should say. James Carville blasting him, I believe it was on Sunday. Bernie Sanders came back and said, quote, James, in all due respect, is a political hack. To which James Carville has since responded, at least I'm not a communist. At least I'm not a communist. I love it. This is so fantastic. I love it. I love all of this. This is great. I just, what are they going to do? What are they going to do? He is continuing to, he's the guy with the upswing in the polls right now. And they cannot help themselves. And I understand their frustration. On one hand, they're desperately afraid. They're afraid that he's going to get the nomination. So what do? They're trying to tell their supporters all the reasons that he should not get the nomination. Well, part of what is appealing to Bernie is that he kind of claims he's an outsider, and he's, even though he's not, but their constant attacking of him validates that presentation that he has, that personality, much like Republicans did for Trump. Now, here, though, is the huge difference. Trump, despite the fears of the Republicans, has tremendously helped the Republican Party. And there may be some people that don't want to believe that. There may be some people. There have been things that President Trump has managed to get done that Republicans have constantly talked about, never been able to do, didn't have, frankly, the guts, if you will, to do it. They may tell themselves that Trump is problematic, but fact of the matter is, anytime they are in a close reelection race, they ask him to come in because he's very successful, he's very effective at helping people get elected. This is not going to be the case if Bernie Sanders gets the nomination for the Democrats. He is not going to lead them to victory. And you are not, other than maybe, you know, the few crazies like Ocasio-Cortez, have Democrats saying, oh, I want Bernie Sanders to come campaign for me. He, unlike Trump, is going to be the opposite outcome for the Democrat Party that Trump was for the Republican Party. Instead of helping, he is going to destroy them. And I think that they know that. Now, what I will enjoy also, there's a lot of stuff I'm looking forward to with this playing out. If he does get the nomination, will they come around? Most Republicans came around when Trump got the nomination. Now, there were a few isolated here and there's, but ultimately, now, they weren't necessarily the biggest cheerleaders in the world, but nonetheless, you did not feel this massive fracturing occurring within the Republican Party. If Bernie Sanders gets the nomination, will the James Carvels and all of these, will they say, oh, forget what I said about him destroying the country, forget what I said about him being a communist, forget what I said about his plans causing an economic meltdown, because he's our nominee, so we're going to support him. Will they do that? I don't know the answer to it. But time will tell on that, I suppose, if he gets the nominee. Still hoping for a brokered convention. In the meantime, a Bernie bro has been arrested on burglary, vandalism, attempted arson charges after attacking a GOP office in North Carolina. I haven't yet seen his response to this when asked by the media. It happened around 5 p.m. Saturday morning at the offices of 5th Street in Eureka. Front windows, glass door of the office smashed, and an unknown liquid was poured in the entryway. According to Eureka Police, the suspect was located shortly after the incident and is in custody. 43-year-old Michael Valls was arrested for burglary, felony vandalism, attempted arson, resisting arrest, and providing a false name. According to the party chairman for Humboldt County, John Shute, this is the sixth time that the Republican office has been vandalized in the last 2 months. Or, sorry, 2 years. The witnesses gave a description of the suspect and said that he was last seen riding a bicycle towards the bay. Officers quickly arrived on the scene, saw the man on the boardwalk. They said the suspect fled from them on bike, but after a short pursuit was detained. According to the EPD, that's Eureka Police Department, the suspect was found to be in possession of a Trump political flag. His bicycle had a Bernie political sticker prominently displayed on it. And now this story, a violent leftist. See, I bring you these because these do not leave the national news. A violent leftist was arrested on Thursday for physically assaulting a 15-year-old Trump supporter and two adults volunteering at a New Hampshire polling site at Windham High School. Patrick Bradley, 34, was arrested and charged with simple assault and disorderly conduct for slapping a high school student in the face because he was wearing a Make America Great Again hat. The boy's mother told local Fox News affiliate that Patrick Bradley screamed F you to her son, and then assaulted him. Another man wearing a Make America Great Again hat came in to intervene when the 34-year-old assaulted him, fracturing his jaw. Now, it also, over the weekend, you had that 24-year-old anti-Trump guy that ran through a tent of Trump supporters signing people up to vote, trying to run over them, and filmed it. Now, here are three instances. One of an attempt to burn down a Republican headquarters. One in which a teenager was assaulted for wearing a Make America Great Again hat, and another guy had his jaw fractured. And one instance in which someone tried to run over people for signing up Trump supporters to vote. And there's no questioning about the rhetoric coming out of the left. There's no open question about what is it about these anti-Trump people that make them want to commit violence. Instead, outside of very, very few people, no one even knows about this stuff. Shelby has a traffic update. I'm Nick Reed. There is a continued back and forth between Donald Trump and Mike Bloomberg. And Trump, among other things, likes to go after the physical traits of his opponents and call Bloomberg a loser who has money but can't debate. saying he reminds me of a tiny version of Jeb. He said Jeb has more political skill and has treated the black community much better than many, he calls him. Trump has ridiculed Bloomberg's height, saying he's 5 foot. He is a 5 foot four, massive dead energy who doesn't want to be on a debate stage with the professional politicians. A simple Google search indicates Bloomberg instead is 5 foot eight. You know what's so great about, and I don't know how deliberate this is, by undershooting Bloomberg's actual height, it puts Bloomberg in sort of a bad position because he can either ignore it and have people think he's 5 foot four, but if he defends it, he's still defending being short. Like, I'm 5 foot eight. It's like saying, oh, this is my 8-year-old. I'm 8 and a half. So it sort of create, and I don't know if that's deliberate, but it's kind of hilarious. Bloomberg was quick to respond via Twitter, calling out Trump as a carnival barking clown. And he has said that, all these people in the New York, they know, amongst the circles, you know, they know that you are a joke. They laugh at you, quote, they know you inherited a fortune and squandered it with stupid deals and incompetence. Now, here's the problem with Bloomberg's insults to Trump. They are basically calling Trump out and saying that, you know, the elites of New York, they laugh at you, they mock at you. But that's part of what so many Trump supporters like about Trump, is that he is not one of them. They are not only perfectly fine with Donald Trump not being loved by the New York elites. They see the fact that the New York elites don't like him as proof that he's a great president. Like, if they did like him, we'd have a problem here. That's part of the problem that we've had, for too long, whether it's the Bloombergs or the Clintons or, you know, and on both sides, it's that elite class, the cocktail parties, the high rise events, with the, you know, the martini glasses and the theoretical conversations about world peace. It's all academia. And it's just these people who think that they should run the world because they're smarter than the rest of us. And so Bloomberg's jabs at Trump appear to be along the lines of, yeah, the elites, they don't like you. The elites, they mock you. The elites, they think that you're some sort of carnival barker that doesn't know what you're doing. And in the meantime, a vast majority of Americans go, yeah, that's what they think about us too. And it reestablishes that sense that Trump is one of us. He's one of the average Americans, which is why he gets mocked and made fun of. And so, as is often the case, the attempt to insult Trump is done in a way that reinforces his marketing, his persona, and his relationship that he has with the voters. Carnival barking clown. It's got to be very frustrating. If you're like, okay, I'm going to be the one to take on Trump here. It just doesn't work. Some of it depends on the person that's doing the insulting. Some of it depends on the way that they're doing the insulting. But nobody seems to be able to really do it in a way that has the impact that they are hoping for. Here are a couple of stories regarding, let's see which one. Let's start with the Olympics. So, February 29th will be the first time a man who is a woman on the inside will compete at the U.S. Olympic marathon trials as a woman. Megan Youngren, set to make history. According to Sports Illustrated, Youngren qualified for the trials after a strong performance on December 8, 2019 in the California International Marathon. Youngren told Sports Illustrated, people try to put it down by saying that's too easy because you're trans, but what about the 500 other women who qualify? They're probably someone with the exact same story. I trained hard, I got lucky, I dodged injuries, I raced a lot, and it worked for me. That's the story of a lot of other people too. Well, Yes, but there is one difference. They are women, and you are a man. In Connecticut, three female high school athletes, along with their families, have filed a federal lawsuit to prevent boys from competing in girls' track while claiming that they're girls on the inside. Their argument, based in science and biology, is that male athletes have a physical advantage in those particular areas. Selena Soleil, a senior at Glastonbury High School, Chelsea Mitchell, a senior, and Alana Smith, a sophomore at Danbury High School, announced the lawsuit in a press conference on the steps of the state capitol in Hartford, according to the Washington Post. Mitchell said, "Our dream is not to come in second and third place, but to win fair and square. All we're asking for is a fair chance." The three are arguing that competing against boys, or, you know, I guess if they're a certain age, they become men, has denied them the chance to win medals and achieve scholarship opportunities. And do you know how I know this was predictable? Because I predicted this several years ago, that this was going to go from something that many people saw as, oh, who cares, it's just some sort of competition, to where you're going to have young girls denied scholarships. Because when it comes to obtaining scholarships at universities, sports scholarships, it's based on performance. And if you have a boy that is allowed to compete with girls that knocks them from first, second, or, you know, they're, you know, maybe a second or third place, they're right there at the bottom of, you know, just barely hit that threshold of what it takes to get a scholarship, but they get bumped out consistently because there are boys competing against them, you're talking about their education. You're talking about, for some of them, the difference between going to college and not going to college. And, of course, the universities aren't going to want to step in and say this isn't fair because they lead the front in wanting to prove how inclusive they are. And so it is just so absolutely backwards. And amazing to me that the political party that pushes this stuff is the party that claims it's the party of women, yet has now decided that, well, unless a boy comes along and claims that on the inside he feels like a woman, and then women, real women, biological women, biological girls, you have to go take a back seat. You've had your time. You've had your fun in the sun. It's time, let's go back to the 50s, the era where women were told just to sit down, and you will be told when you are allowed to be front and center once again. Shelby with traffic, I'm Nick Reed. There's a state lawmaker in Utah, Deirdre Henderson, a Republican, who says it's time to remove the threat of jail time for otherwise law-abiding polygamists. Polygamists is, of course, against the law. This is where, for whatever reason, a man wants to have several wives. She said the law is a failure. It hasn't stopped polygamy at all, and it's actually enabled abuse to occur and remain unchecked. Her proposal to make bigamy an infraction rather than a felony has garnered significant support. It was unanimously approved by a legislative panel Monday, despite resistance from former members of polygamous groups who say that it could embolden abusers. Now, I've always wondered how, as a society, we could justify making polygamy a crime when we legalize gay marriage. Given the main argument, well, there were a couple of big arguments against gay marriage, one that it discriminated, but also that it discriminated against what, love? And who are we to tell people? Who are we to stand in the way of love? Love is love. You've seen those bumper stickers. In case you didn't know that, love is love. I had a discussion. This was with the person in the media at the time of, it was before the Supreme Court weighed in on the gay marriage issue. And I had noted that, well, if it is determined that government cannot dictate to people what exactly marriage is, and therefore they can't say it's between a man and a woman, so a man and a man, a woman can get married, then you've got polygamy and these other issues, then those, you know, you've got to say that too is legal. And he argued, no, that wasn't, you know, no, that's not true, that's still wrong. And I said, why? He goes, well, it's different. I said, well, gay marriage is different. That's the whole reason. That's how you're able to define it as not something that you can do while marriage isn't, because they are different. Well, it's just different. It's just different. That's not no, it's not. I mean, either we allow government to say marriage is between a man and a woman, or if government's going to be involved in it at all, if somebody wants to marry eight different people, they can marry eight different people. And it cracks me up that the people that were at the time so supportive of gay marriage as some sort of moral high ground, you know, because they supported people who just loved. But if you're like, well, what about people who, you know, polygamy, and that's something that they want to do? Well, no. All of a sudden, discrimination is okay. See, you can discriminate against that. Why? Well, because they didn't agree with it. And the some of the arguments here that oftentimes polygamous relationships are abusive. Well, I don't know if you've ever noticed this or not, but sometimes non-polygamous relationships are abusive as well. Men and women. There are tons of abusive relationships between one man and one woman, and one woman and one woman, and one man and one man. And so to argue that polygamists should not be allowed to marry because sometimes there's abuse in those relationships, well, then nobody should be allowed to get married. It's just logic if government's going to be involved in this. As it is. And if we're going to say that you can't discriminate against someone because of who they love. Otherwise, the very people who are so against discrimination actually do support it, as long as it's against someone that's not them. News in 60 seconds.